and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Today, we'll hear about a special edition of an academic journal that looks back on 1 year of the pandemic and how Canada's farmers and food industry have fared.
We were reading and hearing a lot of opinions about thoughts of what might happen from voices that we didn't, frankly, think were either being genuine in their claims or perhaps misinformed. So we were concerned with some of the narratives that were coming out, calling for, you know, big transformational changes that a lot of us thought either were not necessary and perhaps even worse, irresponsible.
We'll get an update on crop prices and the outlook from Markets Farm.
When it was hot and dry, we saw canola pushing up higher and higher. And when we had this rain, we've seen a canola come down.
But first, a word from our sponsor.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.
Before I go on with the rest of the program, I just wanted to congratulate thousands of farm families across this country who are now graduating, essentially, from a school year in which they did weeks sometimes or months of homeschooling they never thought they would have to undertake. I've been doing that a bit myself with my three kids who've spent over this last year, 15 months, months at home learning digitally, requiring parents to often check in on them to make sure everything's working, that the Wi-Fi's up, and doing that on top of all of us working away at our jobs and trying to go on, and with farmers, trying to put in crops, trying to take off crops, and doing this all in the midst of a pandemic. So for all of us who have kids who now will actually get some summer holidays and not require us to be chasing them to get their homework done, congratulations, and I'm gonna call it a happy graduation. Next up, Glacier Farm Media's Kevin Jaworski talks with FarmLink CEO Mark Lepp about his company's new grain marketing platform.
Kevin Jaworski here with Glacier Farm Media, and today on Between the Rows, I will be chatting with Mark Lepp, CEO of FarmLink. So good morning, Mark.
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
Oh, good, good. How are you? Yeah.
I'm doing wonderful, thanks.
Good. And welcome to Between the Rows.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
Okay, Mark, crop inputs and farm equipment have progressed wildly over the last 20 years, but, you know, grain marketing has pretty much stayed the same. But now FarmLink says grain marketing is about change. So can you enlighten us about this change?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, thanks for the question. You know, FarmLink, we're revolutionizing grain marketing. And how we're doing that is we're using advanced and timely technology powered by people. We've been in business for 17 years working with growers, creating marketing strategies for each individual farm. And so we've created a new grain marketing platform called GrainFox to help us with our services to our clients. And what it does is it uses FarmLink's market analysis, which is backed by a team of analysts, local grain marketing advisors, and 20 years of statistical and historical data. You know, while grain marketing isn't entirely new, but we recognize that a lot of producers might not be aware of exactly what the opportunities are and what the advantages are to develop a customized grain marketing strategy specific for their operation. And never mind, you know, the fact that the industry is noisy, lots of information, conflicting information and ideas for producers. So what we're trying to do is redefine grain marketing and revolutionize the industry with tools like GrainFox.
Oh, interesting. So how does this approach then differ from traditional grain marketing?
Well, if you look at agriculture in general, like there's been so many aspects of ag that have progressed wildly over the last couple of decades. I grew up on a farm in southeastern Manitoba. And, you know, in the course of my career, so much has changed from methods of production to seed genetics to crop inputs. And part of my work, what I do is I attend a lot of different conferences. And over the last couple of years, I've attended a couple ag tech conferences. And it's really neat to hear about the investment that's going into agriculture, the technology that's helping producers grow more crop. But what's really caught my eye over the last 5 years is that while there is an enormous amount of money and huge advancements being made, not one of those companies or investment companies or none of the focus is on grain marketing. So we saw a need that, we saw an opportunity to invest in this part of farming. And we also, you know, we had customers and farmers telling us that there was a gap in the marketplace. You know, how do we get more information? How do we get information relevant to me? And we've been in business for a long period of time. And so what we're doing with GrainFox is we're using our experience and our historic FarmLink's historical data to help us power GrainFox to power an individual's grain marketing decisions.
Well, excellent. So what is the platform today and how do you see it evolving in the future?
So what the platform is today is really three main areas. It's financial power, automation with the human touch, and unbiased advisor support on demand. So what does that mean? So with GrainFox, it's modern grain marketing. It's a technology tool that uses FarmLink's market analysis and data, and it gives producers financial power, which allows them to know what they have, what it's worth, when to sell, and most importantly, why. The automation component that I mentioned, you know, farmers and producers are in control of their production, but we're here to help them navigate when to sell. And what that means is by taking the market information, the strategies, and what does that mean for me as a producer? How does this impact my farm? What is the best strategy for me? And the unbiased support from our advisors on demand is that producers can get a quick second opinion, whether they need to sell or when they need to sell, and then be able to sell that with confidence that they're making the right decision for your farm. And today, farmers, you know, the platform, GrainFox platform, works on desktop and mobile, and they can download the GrainFox app from either the Apple Store or Google Play Store. So the second part of your question is how will it evolve? There's a couple of really key, neat things that we're going to be launching here in the next 3 to 6 months. One of the most exciting things would be what we call a local price mapper. So like I mentioned, the producer will have control of knowing what they have and what it's worth. With the local price mapper, we'll give the producer the ability to see what the local cash prices are in their area on demand. We're going to bring that machine, you know, to bring some the learning analysis and recommendations specific for the farm, which gives predictive sales recommendations, price trends, both globally and locally, and a market forecaster as well. There'll be a comprehensive grain management system, which allows them to manage all aspects, really taking, you know, anything that happens in their operation from the bin to the bank, you know, how to inventory management, sales management, and also local prices as well. To wrap all that up, you know, what it does is bring to the producer smart grain marketing recommendations based on their farm business profile.
Wow. Sounds like a very revolutionary program here. So if producers are interested in trying GrainFox, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, they can visit our website, which is farmlinksolutions.ca. And on the website, there's a button there to where they can try GrainFox for free for 90 days. Again, that's farmlinksolutions.ca. And we'd love to show what GrainFox can do for individual producers, and really looking forward to hearing some feedback on their experience and how it can impact their farm.
Well, excellent. Thank you very much, Mark. Very, very interesting. And we really appreciate you coming on to Between the Rows today. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much, Kevin. And I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
That was Kevin Jaworski speaking with Mark Lepp, CEO of FarmLink. We've all lived through the shock of COVID-19 hitting the farm and food industries. It's been such a big and overwhelming set of impacts that it's been hard to stand back and have some perspective on the situation. But that's exactly what some of Canada's top agricultural economists have endeavored to provide. And that's what I talked with Ryan Cardwell, a University of Manitoba professor, about. He's also the co-editor of a special edition of the Canadian Journal of Agricultural Economics, which looks at the pandemic and the farm and food industries after a year. Here is our conversation. What were you trying to accomplish with last year's issue, looking at what the pandemic impact might be, and this look 1 year later, looking at what's actually happened?
Well, I guess two main things. You know, one thing is that at the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of us were responding to a lot of queries from the popular press and colleagues about what might happen in food markets. And the other thing was that we were reading and hearing a lot of opinions about thoughts of what might happen from voices that we didn't, frankly, think were either being genuine in their claims or perhaps misinformed. So we were concerned with some of the narratives that were coming out, calling for, you know, big transformational changes that a lot of us thought either were not necessary and worse, perhaps even worse, irresponsible.
And how did you find getting economists to that quickly produce analysis and even projections where they're putting themselves sort of out there, predicting a very quickly emerging situation?
So, yeah, that's a good question because, you know, typically when we work on big research projects, they typically take years, right? Literally between the time when you start a project and the time it comes out in a journal can be years. And that obviously wouldn't be relevant in this case, though, you know, there are a lot of colleagues who are working on bigger projects relating to the pandemic. But you know what? You know, the credit for that really goes to Alan Kerr at the University of Guelph, who is the managing editor of the journal. And it's, you know, it's a hard thing to do. He's a great taskmaster. He understood that if this is to have any legs, it has to come out right away. And so he asked colleagues with whom he, you know, has past work experience with and kind of knew would be able to deliver on a relatively short horizon. And just kept at them, and you know, it went surprisingly well. Most people responded on time, and we had this thing out in just a matter of a few months.
And, you know, looking at what you did in this most recent issue, which is, you know, taking a look sort of back a year to where we are now, what did you find most interesting there? Was there stuff that, to you as a professional in the field, was something surprising or unexpected or just... interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were a few sort of big picture interesting takeaways, I think. One is, you know, certainly even the authors that contributed to the special issue, I think most of us were surprised by how well the food and agricultural production and distribution system held up. You know, in the first issue, a little over a year ago, you know, we were certainly not convinced that the sky was going to fall, as some commentators were. But the obstacles and the challenges that did emerge were dealt with even faster than a lot of us thought they might be. You know, the trade barriers didn't go up. Borders stayed open to trade in food and processed products and even to temporary foreign workers, much more so than a lot of us thought. And consumer prices stayed very stable. In fact, food price inflation during most of the pandemic was actually below the rate of what it was the year before. And, you know, farm incomes were through the roof last year, right? It's record levels for many, many producers. So I think some of us were surprised by how resilient along those sort of traditional measures of resiliency that the system held up. You know, there were, of course, problems and obstacles and some of which were quite serious, like food security related issues, but those were not the result of failings in the food system. Those were income failures coming from other parts of the economy.
And I suppose across the different analyses you had, because they were broken into different sectors and the impacts that the pandemic has had across those disparate sectors, what was it, or, you know, it was a general phenomenon that the system did better, or the systems did better than a lot expected, even those of you who were more confident in the ability of the system to handle the shock. Was there any generally applicable observation across those different sectors as to why the food and agriculture sectors have proven to be a lot tougher than we all feared?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I don't want to sound too simple here, because certainly there are market failures, and very important ones in agriculture and food markets that we worry about. But for a lot of these instances, trading between regions and countries and provinces worked and kept things moving. And to the credit of most levels of government, they weren't reactionary to some of these the sky is falling claims, and did not impose barriers to impede the movement of workers and food products, and it allowed the market to work and respond, right? So there were responses, you know, in the retailing market, the changes in online and pickup and all those things have been remarkable. And of course, there were serious obstacles on worker illness in processing plants, and those created some obstacles, but you know, we got past them and things are getting back towards normal.
And these articles, like last year's special issue and then this year's special edition, which is current right now, those are both in they are the Canadian Journal of Agricultural Economics. Can you tell people a bit about how they could take a look at that?
The first special issue and this one, we intentionally tailored it to a general audience. So it is written at a level that is targeted towards, you know, popular press and government agencies and producer groups that don't have specialized training in economics. And every article in both of those issues is what we call open access, so freely available. So you can get all of these articles on the Canadian Journal of Agricultural Economics website just by clicking, and you can open it as a PDF or just read it online for no charge.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today to talk about this.
Sure, you're welcome.
That was Ryan Cardwell of the University of Manitoba speaking with me. For more on this, see the stories I've written for the Western Producer in a number of our recent issues. And now, our markets update with Glenn Halleck of Markets Farm. Hello, Glenn, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Ed.
So, Glenn, I suppose you could describe this period as a very late spring or early summer. That tends to mean that weather factors hit the markets and are watched very closely. Where are you seeing the markets going, and what's the big focus right now?
We're in the weather market right now. Canola and other crops are reacting to whatever the weather is. You know, when it was hot and dry, we saw canola pushing up higher and higher. And when we've had this rain, we've seen a canola come down. Just over the last week or so, we've seen canola lose about $50 per ton on the new crop November contract.
Yeah, so basically, you know, it rains is good for the crop. It ain't good for the per bushel price.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah, rain makes grain, right? So, you know, there's obviously very different weather conditions across North America. Are you seeing any sort of spreads developing between, you know, what we've got up here on this side of the border and what they've got down there on their side of the border?
Well, the U.S. Northern Plains is much in the same boat we are. As I understand it, North Dakota has never been so dry. Like, not even in the dirty 30s has North Dakota been this dry. Like, there's some, you know, real, let's say, moisture shortages in the state. When you move further south, when you get into the southern plains, they're getting rain. They're just starting their winter wheat harvest, and it's actually being delayed because of rain. So as you move further south, things get a little bit better.
And how are our kind of Great Plains type crops, which we grow up here in Western Canada, so our prairie crops, how are those comparing to everything going on in the Corn Belt and everything to do with corn and soybeans?
Corn and soybeans in the U.S. are doing fairly good. The U.S. crop, the most recent U.S. Crop progress report is out, and you know, both lost a few points, but I do believe corn is still around that 70% good to excellent mark. Corn is around the mid 60s, so they could stand some rain, but they're doing okay.
And what about around the world? You know, obviously North America is a major producer, but there are crops everywhere growing at the same time in the Northern Hemisphere. What are the big factors outside of our little region of the world? What's the market watching there?
Yeah, it's really odd, Ed, because just a few months ago, you and I were talking about how wet Brazil was. Yeah. The farmers were way behind in their soybean harvest. Now it's done a complete 180. Brazil has the worst drought in 90 years. Their corn crop has just been, let's just say, decimated. They were looking at about a 105 million ton harvest. Now they're lucky if they get just over 90.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how the volatility of the weather, or the, I don't know, maybe it's not volatility, but the unpredictability of the weather this year has really been quite a factor.
Yeah, it's just mind-boggling. You go further south to Argentina, and their corn crop is doing just fine. They got, you know, relatively decent weather, but you look at Brazil, and you might as well be in a trying to grow corn in what used to be a jungle.
Yeah, it's this year has got a lot of wild cards playing in it. Are there any other interesting crops that you're following? What are the factors? Or I guess what are the real stories out there that are drawing attention outside of our kind of couple big mainstay crops?
Wheat is doing pretty well. We got the good prospects in the state. Russia is starting to get better weather. We've seen some private consultancies like ICAR and Sobicon kind of boost their estimates a little higher. I was just looking at a USDA report on Ukraine, and their attaché there is actually raising his projections for wheat in Ukraine. So wheat-wise, things are doing pretty good.
Well, I guess we have, especially with our lack of subsoil moisture across much of North America, I think we're going to have these weather markets to watch pretty closely for the next couple of months. There's not much which is going to allow us to just sort of go to sleep over the summer and assume we're going to get a good crop come fall.
Yeah, we've had some pretty decent rains, but you know, until those moisture reserves build back up, you know, the rain we've had, you know, we hit a stretch of hot weather, and we're back to seeing canola prices jump up because everything is just too dry again.
Yeah, I guess it leads to exciting times and something worth watching. So, well, thanks very much, Glenn, for catching us up on the markets today. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Ed. Happy to take part.
Glenn Halleck is a reporter with Markets Farm. This is Between the Rows. That's all for this week. Join us again next week for another edition of Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, and I wish you all the rain you need, all the sun your crops crave, and all the beautiful sunsets you deserve.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app, GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.